Okay. I'll start with a poem by Jane Hirschfield. How sad they were, the promises we never return to. They stay in our mouths, roughen the tongue, lead lives of their own. Houses built and unwittingly lived in. A succession of milk bottles brought to the door every morning and taken inside. And which one is real? The music in the composer's ear, or the lapsed piece the orchestra plays? The world is a blurred vision of itself, marred, lovely, and flawed. It is enough. So, most of you are on the final days of your time on retreat, a few of you staying longer, but most of us leaving in a few days. And this is the last talk I'll be offering. Maybe I'll give a talk, but I won't give a talk. So, I decided to talk about the subject or the theme of enough. All of our talks during this time have been from our hearts to yours, you know. The intimacy and the being with you all for this amount of time and so many interconnections over the years, and you know, this sense of really, really being on this path together, practicing together, and so wanting to offer something really intimate. And so that's what kind of a talk today's talk is a talk that really truly is from my heart. It's not as if the others have not been, but but this subject is quite dear to my heart. I heard about this concept or this understanding of enoughness in Ajahn Mahabua's Thai. Oh, you can't hear me. Okay. It's kind of low? Yeah. Do you want to try to turn it up a tiny bit? Yeah. And then I'll do a sound check again. Okay. Can you hear me now? Not really. What is it? Oh, that's a good idea. Okay. Better? Better. Okay. Better or good? Is good?
Enough.
Enough. Enough. Very good. Very good. I don't have to say anything else. Okay. So I first heard about this in Ajahn Mahabua's monastery in Thailand a number of years after I had been practicing. And before I heard about it, I was in a situation that was a little bit challenging for me. And I'm not saying that it was objectively challenging, but it was for me. With all of my past Girl Scout kinds of training, there were a lot of different things going on in this monastery that were provocative, such as I went there so that I didn't have to partake in anything having to do with Christmas. And when I had other reasons too, but anyway, I hoped I could avoid Christmas. But instead, there were, from the loudspeaker of the village right next door, Christmas songs over and over again. So, you know, one can't avoid anything. I go to Thailand, and I would never have a loudspeaker of Christmas songs in my usual ordinary life. You know, I had to go there to experience that. And all sorts of other things, too. And at a certain point, it all kind of culminated on this one particular night. And I won't go through the entirety of this night. It did involve falling off of a toilet. And I don't want to give you too much more information than that. It did involve a very frightening looking spider in the bathroom, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'll let you fill in the rest. But anyway, I fell off the toilet, and I was lying on the ground in the bathroom, and I thought to myself, "Wow, you know, enough already, huh?" You know, I just had that thought. I don't know who I was talking to, of course, but it was just that thought. And then I realized, oh, you know, I wouldn't want to be any other place. I wouldn't want to be with anyone else. I wouldn't want this moment to be any other way than the way that it is. And I recognized this depth of happiness. I recognized what I would call enoughness. I didn't have words for it. I was using the word enough, you know, as too much. But then later on in this time with Mahabua, he was a very fierce teacher. He had this reputation for being very fierce. I think you were a little bit scared of him, right?
Terribly were you? Afraid.
I thought so. Just verifying. He had a reputation as being a very, you know, frightening, fierce teacher. Only if you really care about the Dharma, right? He wouldn't be if you didn't. But I just had a very wonderful connection with him. I called him, you know, Maha Metta, because he was very kind to me and very good to me and very, I felt good with him. So, having heard this, though, it took a little bit to realize that he really wasn't what his reputation was. But he had interesting definitions for words that we all know. And how he defined nirvana, awakening, the deathless, the unborn, the ineffable, the mysterious, and all of the other words one can use, is enoughness. Enoughness. And I'll tell you, hearing that was so great at that point. Hearing this really unusual, can't find it in the suttas, this very unusual definition changed my practice entirely. And it's not as if I hadn't had very good teachers before then. I did. I definitely did. But to receive this particular transmission of defining this word that we really can't understand, don't understand, that is undescribable as enoughness, turned everything around. So I offer it to you in this same spirit, and I want to talk about it more. As you know, the word dukkha is translated in many different ways as a sense of being incomplete, as perhaps a sense of not being enough, nothing being enough, of inadequacy, of insufficiency. And my all-time favorite from Mahabua, once again, is dukkha meaning a constant squeeze. A constant squeeze. And don't you know the truth of that, right? And don't you know that when you practice, you get to actually feel the squeeze even more? It's not what all of our descriptions trying to get people to come to retreat say. You know, we don't say come so that you can feel a constant squeeze. We'd be here on our own. But it's true that when we get quiet, when we get quiet, when we're not as distracted, when we're not as entertained, we can feel that squeeze. within our own hearts, and then we can do something about it. That's the thing. To go through this whole life feeling the pressure of the squeeze, but never knowing that there is a way out, is sorrowful. Two, have a sense of this pressure, of this squeezing, and actually know that it is possible to release the squeeze. This is really best use of our human life, to release that squeeze. But we can't be afraid of it. And that's where when we quiet, and it doesn't have to be on a retreat, but when we quiet, we can sense it more vividly, making it possible to release it as well. The dictionary definition of enough, I looked it up once, is adequacy and sufficiency, that which is immeasurable or uncountable. And we could say that nirvana, awakening, realization, is a sense of completeness, of non-fragmentation, of inclusivity, nothing being left out. Nothing being left out. The freedom of the torments of heart, of greed, hatred, and delusion, loosening their grip on our hearts so that we can breathe more easily. We can breathe more comfortably, more easily. So, you know, in this dictionary definition, it very much has to do with the conditioned. It refers to conditions and circumstances, of course it would, which means conditions always changing and not to be relied upon or rested upon. Whereas this definition from Ajahn Mahabua is pointing to the unconditioned. You know, it's pointing to that which is not conditioned. And this sense of the unconditioned is where there is enough, where enoughness can be found. We're always looking in the wrong place. That's part of our conditioning, to look in the wrong place. When we have found out the right place, then, in a way, everything is good. Not easy, but good. The Zen master Rinzai said, "What in this moment is lacking? If not now, when?" We've been offering you wisdom questions, meditative questions throughout our time here. And this is truly a meditative question. You could say it's one question, or you could say it's two questions. Doesn't matter. What in this moment is lacking? Now, when you ask this question, you know by now, not to try to answer it, because the list can be really long. Really long in terms of what we think of as lacking, what we experience as lacking. So we don't want to go there. We want to just ask the question in the here and now. What is it that is lacking now? Not to answer it through the past, through history, through conditioning, but a genuine, enlightened question that we can ask now. And then this wonderful question, if not now, when? Because we're always waiting for another moment. in which we can really practice. You know, we can really understand. I don't know how many of you on this retreat during this month, it's something that, of course, you have seen in your life of practice on retreats up till now. But still, it's very tempting to think about the next retreat you're going to sign up for. If not now, when? This is it. This is always it. This is by David Wyatt. Enough. These few words are enough. If not these words, this breath. If not this breath, this sitting here. This opening to the life we have refused again and again until now. Until now. This life we have refused. Right now, can we accept the invitation? It's always happening. The invitation is ongoing. Can we accept the invitation? If not now, when? When we are not in touch with our essential enoughness, in its place is hungry ghost mind, which everyone here in this room has heard about countless times, I'm sure. You know, that sense of just never being able to get enough nourishment in. Always feeling deprived, always hoping, maybe at times demanding. No lack, no amount of what we get is enough. No praise is enough. No success is enough. No gain is enough. We're kind of going for the great gain, but it's a dream. You know, it's a thought. No gain is enough. No visibility is enough. And we find ourselves insecure and anxious. We find ourselves confused and lost in doubt. This unquenchable hunger and thirst because of looking in the wrong place, not because of being a failure, not because of being a bad meditator or a bad person or anything along those lines. So easy as older practitioners, experienced practitioners, seasoned practitioners to claim the sense of not enough because we're sophisticated, too sophisticated. So we've heard about these things over the years. And then we attach to them, means this or it means that about me, that nothing is ever enough. This only happens when we claim ownership of hungry ghost mind. Everything can be a pathway, so hungry ghost mind can be a pathway too, now. Not as a project, not as something that we're going to deal with at another time, take up later, really make into something. But here and now, everything can be a passageway. Everything can offer us access. So in the willingness to know not enough, to open to not enough, and to not identify with not enough. This is what offers access to enough. in the silence of being here, not talking, it's really easy to come up with lists about one's life, what has not been enough, what is not enough, what will not ever be enough. But I think one of the areas in particular we want to look at is the arena of relationships. Because there is a way on retreat where you can feel enoughness. You know, you can have a sense of enoughness. But then, I don't know, you know, someone walks through your mind who shouldn't be there. I'm thinking of Mae Starton's poem of how she would like to walk for miles and miles, never bumping into anyone in her own mind. In her own mind. So whether we're on retreat or off retreat, always bumping into people that we like, that we dislike, that we love, that we have aversion to, that we delight in, that we maybe every once in a while feel ordinary about, but not that often for most. Not that often. Usually it's the passion in one way or another. Yeah. So particularly friends and family and other beings that we bump into. My husband, Jonathan, at a certain point said to me a number of months ago, he said, you know, he had just had a little glitch with someone in his family. And he got off the phone and he said, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with the absolute, but not so much with the relatives. I know, it's great. It's great. With the relatives, you know, with the relatives. And all beings in this world are our relatives. So yes, harder perhaps with those that we are karmically connected to and around more often. But as well, all beings being related. I sometimes think that it's easier to know not self than it is to know not other. You know, that not self is one thing, and not other is another thing. And it doesn't make sense because, of course, not self is not other. Of course, how could not self not be not other? But we know that intellectually because, of course, that makes sense. But does it always make sense to the heart? And that is part of our endeavor, is to be really honest and to take on everything as our practice. It's one thing to drop the narratives about yourself, because maybe this is a different way to put this and maybe a little bit more illuminating. It's one thing to drop the narratives about oneself, as embedded as sometimes difficult that is. But it's equally difficult, and perhaps more difficult, to drop the narratives about others. You know, we freeze others. We try not to freeze ourselves. We do our best not to freeze ourselves. We can find ourselves frozen and embedded in beliefs. But we try to shake it up because we're suffering too much, so we try to shake it up. But when it comes to others, to the world of relationships, it can be frozen. We can have ideas about others that happened in situations that happened decades ago. You know, decades ago, and yet we freeze them in a certain way, and we know that we're right. You know, we know that we're right. When how could we know? We can't know because others are as mysterious as we ourselves are. It's always causes and conditions. It's always the ineffable nature of each one of us. It's always the unknowability. So this is just encouragement to recognize these stories and narratives that one has held so tightly, sometimes for really good reason, for protection, so that we won't be in a similar situation if we can help it. You know, really good reason. And it's going to be a limitation. It is going to confine, and it is going to close our hearts from real metta, from real wisdom, from real understanding. It's such a poignant area, you know, this hope for completion in another, this hope that others will finally wake up and do what they should be doing, do what they should have done. It's really poignant, you know, and I'm so against being naive and all of that in spiritual idealism. I don't think it does anybody any bit of good. I think we have to live where we are and be with what we can be with and open to the totality of what is here. There can also be this core belief, I am not enough. You know, Rodney was speaking about core beliefs the other day, and something is wrong with me. I find I am not enough to be one of the core beliefs that I hear over and over again. I mean, you can have the core belief I am too much. That is possible, too. But oftentimes what I hear is I am not enough. We've been talking about metta. We've been talking about awareness in terms of being with awareness and being within awareness and being as awareness. So the same thing is true, of course, with metta. Seeing with metta. Seeing with metta. Seeing with metta is a companioning that doesn't have to do with beliefs. It's seeing the full humanity. It's seeing the sacred spark in everyone. It's seeing with the heart and recognizing those moments of disconnection, of dehumanizing, of objectifying. This is not an easy task, not to objectify and dehumanize. And so seeing with metta is resonating with. I think sometimes that the categories of metta are so brilliant because it brings us out of idealism. When we look instead of, oh, you know, I love all beings, but then accept, right? Yeah. So moving with the particular categories of self and benefactor and friend and difficult person and all beings makes it real, makes it authentic. Seeing within metta is a field of loving kindness. You know, that's the field in which we are sitting and living. Uncontained, limitless, radiating out in ever-increasing circles. Radiating out in ever-increasing circles. And as metta is embodiment itself, no sense of separation, that distance that Rodney was speaking about the other day is gone, has dissolved. And with this, no identification with being a good person or a bad person. Simply living from moment to moment as is. Sometimes I think about people like Martin Luther King, who, in speaking to those in Alabama, the white population in Alabama, he said, "I love you. I would rather die than hate you. I would rather die than hate you." That is as metta. That's when, I don't know whether you can say that it's self-sacrifice when there is no self there to be sacrificed. It's spontaneous action based on the deepest understanding. The pronouns drop away, they soften, they become less important. Less important and unimportant, really. When I was on pilgrimage in Auschwitz, bearing witness, I wasn't sure I had enough time to tell you this story, but I do. And I think it could be helpful. I was there two times with the Zen peacemakers. So I was there two different years for a week each time, with the Zen peacemakers, and learn different things on both times of being there. And the second time I was there, I was really going into the question of how could people treat each other this way? You know, how could this be? How could there be this kind of cruelty? How is it possible that in this range of human being action, there could be such complete disconnection and sense of separation? And gradually, and I'm saying that this came as an understanding, because obviously I can't understand it intellectually. Nothing is satisfying to me from an intellectual point of view. So I kept putting the question down, and kind of just continuing to arise. And because of being in contact, it continuing to arise, but also it started to really draw me in as a question. And what I began to see is causes and conditions, you know, on a gut level, not on a Buddhist, you know, kind of understanding level, but on a gut level, causes and conditions. And that it was the same, or is the same, or will be the same as anything in nature. You know, as an earthquake, as a tornado, as a tsunami. So I say this to you not in a light way. I don't say it from the point of view of, you know, it's something to adopt or anything like that. But I offer it to you because it was from the inside. Doesn't mean that we don't do what we do to contain. And in terms of understanding, it does offer a way to understand from within, in the heart. To be able to sustain attentiveness, come what may, we have to understand these things. Because, of course, how could we not try to go under? How could we not avoid? How could we not deflect? These things have to be understood from the inside. So, We don't want to talk, although people do talk, about getting enlightened. What is much more accurate is letting go of delusion regarding our true nature and to always understand that your true nature is just as good as the Buddha's. Everyone's true nature is just as good as the Buddha's true nature. Not a smidgen of difference. Not a smidgen of separation. And this is the potentiality for all beings. When we say all beings are already awake, what does that mean? It means we know and we honor and we see with metta best we're able to. Best we're able to. I was with this wonderful Zen abbess many years ago before I was about to go off on a long retreat. And she was great. I mean, she wanted to take me home with her, which was to Japan for the next 10 years. So I said, you know, thank you so much. I wish I could go. But instead, I have a question for you. I said to her, what might you tell me in terms of this long retreat? What advice might you tell me? And she paused for a little bit and just was quiet and, you know, just was looking at me. And she had very kind eyes, so it was okay to be looked at. But she finally said to me, just come back more like yourself. And I thought, really? You know, I had planned on coming back as someone else, if possible. Didn't really matter who, you know, in that frame of mind I was in at that point. So I felt like, you know, a little bit thwarted in my endeavors. But it was a wonderful meeting before going off because I got it. I understood. She was saying to me, have complete and utter confidence in who you are. Not in your personality, not in your limitations, not in your patterns and your habits and your insecurities and your anxieties and your perceptions about yourself and the mistakes you're going to make and all of that. You know, have confidence in your Buddha nature. So it's a bit of a blessing. Come back the way you already are. Have confidence in your true nature, your Buddha nature. Gradually or suddenly, doesn't matter which it is, gradually or suddenly we learn to rest in this kind of trust, in the sweet joy of the way. Long-time meditators coming to an end of a retreat, there can be this kind of review of how the retreat has been, this sense of weight, of history. And you can always come up short. You can always second-guess yourself. You can always think, oh, not enough. I should have practiced like this or like that, and then I would have gotten this or that. Stay steady in what you know now. Don't waver. Don't be swayed. Don't be seduced. Everybody in this room knows something. Stay steady in that something that is a nothing. Questioning all beliefs regarding the source of intrinsic peacefulness. Is it possible to withdraw one's faith in where we think intrinsic peacefulness lies? The faith we have in thinking that we're not trying hard enough, that I just need to try harder to make conditions give me what I need. I don't ever do enough. Opening to the mystery, opening to love. This is living one's understanding right here and right now. Instead of trying to fill the endless hole within the heart, instead of trying to bring conditions to heal the constant squeeze, we release, we relinquish, we let be, we let go. We relax the grasping. We relax the grasping. Let's just sit quietly for a moment together. And I'll read you from Antonio Machado, Last Night as I Was Sleeping. Last night as I was sleeping, I dreamt, marvelous error, that a spring was breaking out in my heart. I said, along which secret aqueduct, O water, are you coming to me, water of a new life that I have never drunk? Last night, as I was sleeping, I dreamt, marvelous error, that I had a beehive here inside my heart, and the golden bees were making white combs and sweet honey from my old failures. Last night, as I was sleeping, I dreamt, marvelous error, that a fiery sun was giving light inside my heart. It was fiery because I felt warmth as from a hearth, and sun because it gave light and brought tears to my eyes. Last night, as I slept, I dreamt, marvelous error, that the mystery of all things is here inside my heart.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.